Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNC 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Spring is sprung and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, how we doing? What's going on?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
You're great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, obviously, lots of discussion about A.J. Brown here in Nashville with him being traded from the Titans to the Philadelphia Eagles. What did you make of that move on the first round of the draft as the Titans were trading with the Eagles? They move up to 18 to go get Treylon Burks. What did you make of all that transpired with the Tennessee Titans on the first round of the NFL draft?
It was definitely eyebrow raiser. It's, you know, I think we talked on the show earlier about, you know, when I was at the owners' meetings and I was standing in the lobby and John Robinson was talking about the money that wide receivers were making and just that, hey, a lot of money that you know, the top-tier receivers are making now. And, you know, I think that they were really far apart on that contract, you know, I think in excess of $5 million a year APY, and that's really hard to overcome. And, you know, I think for John to put the value in, you know, having younger, cheaper players, assets, and not having to build around a wide receiver contract, which sounds weird, but that's how some teams are starting to approach this, that, hey, elite-level receivers are going to make $25 to $30 million a year. Do we really want to build around a wide receiver deal, in particular if we have to build around a quarterback deal as well? And, you know, some teams just aren't going to do it. They're going to sit there and say there's a lot of younger assets coming into the league. Wide receivers a position of strength the last couple of years in the draft. It's going to be a position of strength probably for the next few seasons, if not perpetually, given how players now train and work coming up at the position. And it's just one of those situations that's unfortunate because there's no doubt that A.J. Brown's a great player. There's no doubt that he had a connection with Ryan Tannehill. And it's, you know, this is a part of the business that stinks. I think the Eagles sat there and said, hey, we're comfortable adding this kind of a contract to our team, and we don't, you know, we don't have an issue, particularly considering Jalen Hurts is, you know, on a rookie level deal at the quarterback position. We can afford to work somebody into our, you know, cap structure that's going to make $25 million, you know, plus moving forward. And, you know, it's, we'll see how it all shakes out, but it's, I know fans there probably are frustrated when you have something like this happen. And trust me, you're not alone. There are other fan bases that are sitting there staring at wide receivers that they've lost and quarterbacks with wide receivers they've lost. Think about this. This is kind of crazy. The last three MVPs, league MVPs, all lost their top wide receivers this offseason. Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, Hollywood Brown, you know, that's, wow, that's three MVP quarterbacks that all lost their number one wideouts and realistically didn't really have them replaced adequately in this cycle. So that tells you a little bit about the NFL's team building right now and sacrifices that, you know, franchises are making to figure out how they're going to operate moving forward with elite number one receivers.
That's a good headline to take out of this. Charles Robinson predicts Ryan Tannehill MVP in 2022. I think I think we can really work with that one.
I'll tell you what. Like, imagine you're Ryan Tannehill and you're sitting there going, well, let's see, lost one of my closest friends and my number one wideout and gained company in the quarterback room. Awesome. Great. That's really a good draft cycle for me. Not great.
Let me cast another line out to the sea. Drink another Celsius. Yes. So meanwhile, Charles, Debo Samuel, you know, the Niners don't, I mean, if obviously you told me going to the draft, if one of the two teams is going to trade, you know, their receiver on draft night, I would have picked the Niners, not the Titans. Where do you think that one goes?
Well, it's interesting because that sort of showcases the differences between, you know, the Titans and the 49ers and how other franchises want to handle things. The Niners want to do the deal with Debo Samuel. And frankly, I think it's going to be more expensive than the A.J. Brown deal would have been. But it's a scenario where the Niners are sitting there trying to figure out how to lay the groundwork for a return with Debo Samuel. And there are a number of hurdles. And I think some of them are financial. There's the contract. There's the usage of him. Like, if he's going to continue to be used in this running back role as well as wide receiver, I think contractually that could potentially, at least from his standpoint, he's sitting there saying, I think I should probably be the, you know, highest paid wide receiver in the game because I do a multitude of different things. I take a different level of punishment than normal wide receivers do. But I don't think it's just contract. I do think part of it is, you know, the region of the country where he wants to finish his career, which frankly played into Devontae Adams wanting a trade, played into Tyreek Hill wanting a trade. So I do think how he continues forward and where he continues forward geographically matters to him. There's another thing too, Mike McDaniel, he was super close to Mike McDaniel. He basically created what Debo Samuel became in that offense. Mike McDaniel leaves for the Miami Dolphins and then trades for Tyreek Hill to basically recreate the Debo Samuel experience in Miami. And now Debo's sitting there going, man, my guy, the one who I was most connected with on the coaching staff is now gone. I think that has had an impact on him. So it's pretty complicated there. But the one thing is the Niners are sitting there saying, A, we don't want to let him go. We got some good offers. You talk to the Lions and Jets, they both said, look, for what they wanted in return, it's clear they were not serious about trading him unless a team just absolutely forced the 49ers to say yes to a deal. So I can't really tell you what the path is to trying to work this out other than, you know, the Niners basically saying, look, we have your rights, you got to show up, and let's try to make this work and hoping that maybe they can get through 2022 and somehow, you know, change his mind about both the staff, his role, and, you know, where the finances are going. The finances to me are probably the least problematic because I do think the 49ers want to pay him. It's just sort of everything else that's gone on in the franchise with him.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on with us here on Robbie and Rextro. So Charles, you brought it up with Tannehill, the Titans select Malik Willis in the third round. What did you make of that pick, and what did you make of the quarterbacks sliding down as far as they did in the draft?
Well, Willis was interesting, and I think, first off, to answer the question about the quarterbacks, they turned out really the assessments that we heard early on were accurate. You know, a lot of people in the league didn't like this class, said it lacked the star power at the top. A number of people were like, hey, I would be surprised if one quarterback gets drafted in the first round. Maybe no quarterbacks get drafted in the first round. I think it's really interesting that Kenny Pickett, the one that does get drafted in the first round, literally gets picked by the team that if you sat there and said, tell me about, you know, the one franchise who knows the one quarterback better than any other franchise in the draft knowing a quarterback, it was clearly Pittsburgh. I mean, you know, Pickett played in Pittsburgh. He's a door away. He was in their practice facility every single summer. And maybe that's why he ends up being a quarterback that gets drafted in the first round, because a franchise is so ridiculously familiar with him, you know, that they know and has the need that they know it's something that they, you know, can establish and move forward feeling like, hey, we're not going to be blindsided by anything. Willis, on the other hand, I thought was interesting, and I ended up writing literally heading into the first day of the draft, I was like, all right, let's do one more recheck on the quarterback position. It was funny because I had one general manager who had an established quarterback in the league and said, we had a conversation, like kind of an extended conversation about should we just draft Malik Willis anyway in the first round? And then I had an NFC team, an evaluator, and it was an NFC team where they were moderately needy at quarterback, who said he's not even a first-round pick. And that was pretty much emblematic of what the league thought of Malik Willis. Some teams loved him. Some teams thought, you know, not a first-round pick, definitely a developmental player, might be years before he kind of gets where we think he'd go, like the skill set, but just not somebody we would take high. I think that's how he ends up getting drafted in the third round. Now, for the Titans, I think it's a good situation because, you know, Ryan Tannehill, at the very least, is in the fold for 2022. There's a contract beyond 2022, but it gives the Titans an opportunity to work with a young player who needs some development as a passer, and they can figure out, you know, pretty quickly, do we think this is someone that could eventually supplant Ryan Tannehill, and it gives them some flexibility beyond 2022. So, you know, Ryan Tannehill, I don't know if I would view it as an immediate threat, but he is a player that was thought enough of in other organizations that if he is the first round pick they viewed him as, he could potentially challenge, you know, for Tannehill's job beyond 2022. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but, you know, given what his skill set is, given that he fits really where the league is going at quarterback, it's pretty interesting that now they have somebody in-house to groom and kind of look at while they consider what they want to do with Tannehill's contract beyond the season.
So we've already gotten into this. It's always, it's been close. I think the Matt Ryan pickup, you know, could work out, but I'm not sold completely. If you had to pick right now, who's the better team? Who's the favorite in the AFC South, the Titans or the Colts?
You know, I
you can say the Jags if you want.
It's hard to lose an AJ Brown. Like, it really is. I don't know now. You know, when I look at that depth chart, and I know, look, Julio Jones didn't work out, but it's hard to sit there and go, okay, they went into 2021, and these were, you know, really the two wide receivers that they were going to depend on quite a bit going into 2021. Now you're going into 2022. You've definitely lost your A number one elite level wide receiver, and you're replacing him with a rookie in Treylon Burks, who is not going to be a one for one replacement. It's hard not to look at the Colts and say, okay, it feels like they might have a little more traction. But as you said, they also are kind of up in the air at quarterback. I don't know for sure. They feel very confident that Matt Ryan is not just a 2022 Band-Aid, that this is a player that might have enough juice left for the next couple of years. I don't know. I mean, if he's Phillip Rivers, if it's that all over again, you know, they're going to be dipping right back into the quarterback class pretty quickly. If he's better than that, if he does have a little bit of wind left in his sails, they're going to be a tough team. And some of the issues that they had down the stretch with Carson Wentz, they won't have with Matt Ryan. Let me put it to you that way. There was a lot of internal stuff going on with Carson Wentz that I think chemistry-wise they felt like was a little more disruptive than what they had signed up for. That won't happen with Matt Ryan. He's the opposite. So if he's that calming sort of influence at an important position, you know, that's going to help them immensely. I just think losing A.J. Brown for this offense with Tennessee puts a lot of pressure on the staff to try and you know, I don't know if you lean back into Derrick Henry, you go and you draft Haskins, who, you know, I thought was a pretty solid pick for the role that he can play for that team, and it becomes more of a run-dominated defensive team again. I don't know, man. I'd probably lean into the Colts right now just because I think you lost a really immense player in A.J. Brown, and I don't know what the ripple effects are going to be quite yet with that offense.
All right, Charles, last thing for you here. What did you think of the Ed Marinaro Comedy Hour announcing the Vikings pick?
He was definitely sailing without a map on that answer. Like, I sat there and I was like, you know, We should have put him on a clock. Like, I was curious. It felt like a long time, but then when you see a producer come out on the stage, I'm like, wow, it's rare to see them, you know, send somebody out and tell Ed to wrap it up.
Hey, read the pick, dude.
Yeah, it's interesting, kind of the production of what the draft has become is really interesting. You know, bringing these individuals out, whether it's actors, you know, ex-players, whatever, to read the picks and keep people entertained. But not only that, I thought it was really interesting too that the Lions kind of got grief for turning in the Aiden Hutchinson card so fast, that the league was like, hey, you know, let's let it play out a little bit. The league's sitting there thinking like, hey, we have like commercial programming.
I was like this.
Yeah, I don't like Dan Campbell. I thought it was funny. Dan Campbell's like, yeah, we're not waiting for that. Like, we don't care. Like, that's our guy. We're going to turn that in fast. And we're not kind of going through the motions so the NFL can continue to, you know, draw airtime and sell, you know, commercial spots and stretch it out. It's wild kind of what the draft has become now. And you know, Roger Goodell getting booed is now like a staple. Like, it's just, it's such an entertainment event. And a little part of me wished I bowed out of going to Vegas, but now that I'm sitting there, and no offense, by the way, to Kansas City, Detroit, and I think probably Green Bay will be the next one. But I'm like, man, I can't believe I passed up Vegas, and the next three are in Kansas City, Detroit, and Green Bay. So,
hey, but you did not pass up Nashville, did you? No, that's right. You know what's up.
I didn't.
You know what's up.
I didn't. And Nashville, you know, it was really entertaining. I had a really good time in Nashville, except for, you know, hanging out with you, Joe, but yes. Everything else was great.
You got to go to the bar with Katie. Come on, man.
The chicken and the bachelorettes and Katie made it all worth it. So that was really what was.
Charles Robinson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. Charles, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you being with us this morning.
All right. Appreciate it, guys. Have a good week.
All right, you too. Charles Robinson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Chris Mason coming up at 9:30 as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. So 102.5 The Game and myself coming up this Friday at the Food Court in Rivergate Mall from 12:30 to 2:30. You can come out, get registered to win a pair of tickets to Round 1, Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Playoffs as the Preds take on the Colorado Avalanche at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Saturday. That's this Friday at the Rivergate Mall at the Food Court from 12:30 to 2:30. Make sure you're there. I'll be there as well. Come get registered to win a pair of tickets to Round 1, Game 3 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Charles Robinson for joining us there in the last segment. Joe, what did you make of Charles's thoughts on AJ Brown and Deebo Samuel? What do you make of the different ways that the Titans and the 49ers are handling this? Obviously, Titans decided to trade A.J. Brown and didn't waste a whole lot of time doing so, apparently. And Deebo Samuel has openly requested a trade and has made that public. And the San Francisco 49ers at this moment have still held on to him and to his services. What do you make of the way that this has transpired and played out so far with A.J. and Deebo Samuel?
Yeah, well, I think that the 49ers, like Charles said, and a lot of people have said this, I think that they would have dealt him had they gotten the return they wanted. So, but that's another part of this too. I think probably the most under-discussed part of the A.J. Brown trade is the return, you know? Yeah. I mean, you're kind of in a bind if you decide to do that. I would have expected, you know, we talked about it when it first started to come up, right? What would it take? Two firsts? I mean, what, you know, you're talking – major capital coming back to deal a player like this, regardless of the people. And I'm going to try to be nice to these people. I'm not going to be nasty or sarcastic. You know, the people who are like, well, 65 yards a game and 1,100 yards, and you know, that's fine. you know, we'll just disagree on that. I mean, I agree with Charles' assessment of A.J. Brown. Elite. He said great. He said elite. I think that's where things are heading if he's healthy. And, again, I think that's my biggest question, right, is if he's healthy. But with the Niners, I mean, this is a – I mean, you've got to get big-time stuff back. And if you don't, again, you can go this route. You can go into the pain of a holdout and of renegotiation. You try to do – I mean, clearly, like, their agent probably isn't, like, the favorite agent of GMs and personnel people in the league, right?
Yeah.
Sounds like he's kind of aggressive there. That seems kind of obvious based on what we've seen, right? But, you can go that route and you could still potentially work it out.
What did you think of the return for A.J. Brown? Obviously, we know you get 18th overall in the first round pick, but there are some Titans fans, and we've heard from a few of them on our text line, saying that the return for A.J. was a little bit underwhelming. What did you think of the return for A.J. in that trade?
Yeah, well, that's exactly. I mean, it is underwhelming. It's part of my problem with the whole thing. It was an underwhelming return, without question. So, you can look at percentage played. I got information. Let's see. So, A.J. played – I'm getting information here from someone. AJ played 49% of the snaps last year. Derrick Henry, 36, Julio, 31 versus, okay. So here's some other receivers in the league. Kupp, 94, Chase, 85, Adams, 79. And I hear that. Okay. I hear that. It's definitely like, if you tell me that AJ Brown is going to continue to have nagging injuries and miss 3-4 games a year, well, then I don't think he is worth that contract. It's guesswork either way. The fact that I think if it was knee again, coming back knee, last year, you're like, okay, this is going to just, how is this not going to keep being a problem? It's like Caleb Farley with the back. Like someone has said, a lot of people say like back injuries, like they don't, that means you just have a back injury the rest of your life. But AJ had a shoulder thing and he had a hamstring like Julio last year. And so I think that he's got a good chance to be on the field for bigger. You got to be on the field for more than half your team's snaps to justify the price tag. I mean, it's guesswork. It's gambling either way. But I don't think the return was great. I think they were in a bit of a bind, and that's part of it too, is if you decide that you have to do this, yes, you can recoup assets, but you also don't have great leverage.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds as they take on Colorado in game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight here in just a few minutes. Make sure you tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight on ESPN 94.9 as the Sounds open a 6-game homestand at First Horizon Park against the Norfolk Tides, AAA affiliate of the Baltimore Orioles. Pregame show with Jeff Hem starts at 6:20 and first pitch is at 6:35. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Spirited Hive. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week, time to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Preds TV analyst Chris Mason, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. It's playoff time. C-Mace, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing great. I am absolutely jacked up and ready to go. This is it's here. And today's the day.
Today is the day. It's finally here. And C-Mace, we've been looking through all show. I think we've been able to find two people from the national prognosticators, be that ESPN or NHL.com or The Athletic, wherever you want to look. We found two people that have picked the Predators to win this series. So with that in mind, obviously they're huge underdogs heading into this series. What do you make of that part of it? And what do you make of the matchup for the Preds as they take on the Western Conference's best team in Colorado?
Well, that's crazy. I was actually, when I got up this morning, I was thinking about that. I was wondering if, because a lot of the talk at the beginning of the season was nobody picked the Preds or there was very few people. And I didn't honestly think anybody would pick the Preds to beat the Avs. I mean, it just makes sense. But, they're the best team in the West and they've earned that status. They have the personnel. But I think, the Preds coming in, if they embrace the underdog, which I feel like they've been very comfortable in that in their past. And not that history necessarily has anything to do with it, but there's a lot of guys that on the team that have still been in that situation quite a bit. And this whole season, I feel like, you know, they've been underdogs. Nobody, you know, you can tell the way that your opponent plays you, the way that, you know, people talk about you in the media and all those types of things. And that can be, I feel it's a galvanizing thing for a team if you have the right makeup. And I feel this team and this coaching staff has really approached that the right way. And I think it's just more of the same. But in order for them to do that, I think, you know, one of my keys tonight is take it to the trenches. I think if the Preds want any chance of beating the Avalanche in this series, they have to make it that type of game. You even saw that in the last game when they just a couple games ago when they won, you know, they were getting the wheels beat off them there the first, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. They're going to the penalty box. They're trying to, you know, they couldn't get to the forecheck. It wasn't physical, and it was all Avalanche. But as soon as the Preds were able to start getting physical on, you know, Gerard, Byron Boehm, and then, you know, all their defensemen. They got Manson back there who's their only physical guy. I mean, Eric Johnson's a big guy. He's not that physical. He can kind of play that game. But, you know, once you get down there, and their stars don't want to play defense as well. You know, they're not big. They're not physical. They don't want to play that game. And if you look at the majority of their losses this season, I was talking to Dan Hinote yesterday, and he said they're all heavy teams. The teams that they lost to multiple times, the Preds three times, Washington and Dallas, They don't fare as well against those teams. They just don't have the personnel to do that. But having said that, they've got some of the best players in the league. So you have to take this series to that. You have to try to do that. And I guess as hard as it is, stay within the lines and not take penalties. Last night, they're calling a ton of penalties. So I know everyone's jacked up and the emotions are going to be high, but the Preds do have a fighter's chance.
So to that point, C-Mace, you know, obviously the herd line has been so key, or the identity line, as John Hines calls them. They've been so key all season. They, of course, haven't produced as much lately. I feel like they're going to be they were going to be important in any series, but in this series, I feel like even more so. But what about just, you know, in terms of their production? Like, how important is it not only for them to set the tone, but also to chip in? Because I just feel like when it boils down to it, the Preds are going to have to generate a lot of offense to win this series, right?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. I think they're playing well. I think they're getting chances. It's kind of sense. I think you guys probably sense the frustration, you know, at the end of the season. Tanner, you know, was getting around the net a lot, and he was just unable to kind of convert. And you know, Sisson's got the goal against Arizona, but they're getting chances. But I think more importantly, they're going to be, you know, it's going to be another thing to keep an eye on, too, is to see how Jared Bednar matches the first two games, who he wants out there. The last game, he went McKinnon on, you know, went top line against top line, so that was interesting. I think John Hines has no problem with that. He trusts Granlin. You know, Duchesne and Forsberg have been much better defensively this season, so that's not something he'd have to, you know, shy away from or try to change up somehow. But the herd line, they're one of the most important lines because they get, you know, two-thirds of their faceoffs start in the defensive zone. And, you know, they're going to be going against the big dogs. And if John Hines changes first, it's the defensive zone. He's going to put them out there if they're ready to go, whoever Bednar decides, because he trusts them in that situation. So, but having said that, when you play that style of play and you play against some of that top competition, you know, there's going to be opportunities to create offense, and you're going to need depth in scoring. You can't just rely on, you know, I guess it's been, you know, Forsberg and Duchesne and Yossi the whole year, and you can't look past Ryan Johansson and what he's done this year. He has had an incredible year, and I believe he's got, you know, overshadowed a lot by, you know, some of the other incredible seasons that guys are having. But that line, too, is another one. I think Tomasino is an X factor. And then you have Luke Cunningham, a guy who kind of I feel like he is, you know, plays that playoff style of hockey and just hasn't got, you know, the offense I think that we need. So that's another line, much like the herd line, that I think is going to have to, if they're going to win this series, they're going to have to get some big goals from that line. So it's very interesting. But the herd line to me, I mean, I'm guessing they're going to start the game. They're going to be responsible for setting the tone, but you know, Trenton had a heck of a year too, but you're going to need some pucks to go in with that line, I think, to knock off the Avalanche.
Chris Mason on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. So C Mace, obviously no UC Soros for at least the first two games. And let's just assume that Dave Riddick's in there tonight. I'm curious from your perspective, obviously, as somebody who's played the position, when David Riddick is on, what does he do really well, in your opinion?
I think he battles. And, you know, the last few games that he's played, even though the things didn't go well and, you know, he got put in that Calgary game, they lost, whatever, that's a tough situation. And we were talking about that before with you guys. There's no other position in sports that could be sitting there literally for 2.5 hours, you know, in a building full of ice and have to go in ice cold and have to perform and be expected to be at your best. But I really feel he has to give them good goaltending. He has to be solid. There's no question about that. They're going to be tested. I feel that this team in those situations has really kind of cleaned it up defensively and battled more and made more of an effort to take care of the middle of the ice and keep things perimeter. You know, obviously, Saros is one of the best goaltenders in the world. It's, you can't expect, you know, that type of performance, but it's a huge opportunity for him. And any goalie in the National Hockey League, if you're in this league, you're capable of stealing hockey games. You're capable, obviously, you're one of the top 60, whatever it is, 64 guys on the planet. So he's definitely got that ability, but they're going to need him to be good. There's no question about it. I think I'm so happy that encouraged, I think, was maybe the better word, that he had that performance against Colorado, the way he bounced back. It really showed me the kind of the mental fortitude I think you have to have as a goaltender. Is, you know, if you get down in a game against a top team, that you're not going to let that first 10 minutes dictate the rest of the game. And I feel that that's a great sign for him and for the guys that they were able to come all the way back and win this one. And he had to be great in certain situations when it was 4-2 at the end of the second period. They were under siege. Riddick stood tall. Beginning of the third period, same thing. He was fantastic when it was 4-3, and then obviously he was great rest of the game. And that's what you're going to need, especially in these first two games in Colorado. They're going to try to put the Preds out of the series, you know, right away. They're going to go for the jugular. And I think, you know, if the Preds can sneak one out of here, which all the pressure's on the Avalanche. You mentioned all the experts. There's no one in the league is picking the Preds, you know, except for a couple outliers that you mentioned. So it'll be he's going to be just as much as anyone. He might be the biggest, you know, key in the whole situation here is his performance.
Excuse me, Chris, you mentioned, you know, the heavy teams do better, you know, have done well against the Avs, have struggled against a heavier team. So I'm looking at a lineup decision that I don't know if this is the exact decision, but if the lines go the way we expect, it could be John Hines looking at an Olivier, possibly looking at a Tolvanen, you know, on that fourth line with McCarron. Which way would you go? Because I would make the case that Tolvanen, like, you need scoring, but I mean, I understand the impulse to go heavy and physical everywhere you can.
Yeah, I would think this is my thoughts going into whoever they play. I was thinking that had they played Calgary, Olivier would be in, just because of the opponent and the way that we all know the way that series would have went. It would have been an absolute war. But I think against the Avalanche, you know, a guy like Tolvanen, you know, if you can get a certain matchup or, you know, those certain moments of the game, he has that skill set. You know, he looked good that last game against Arizona, started to get some chances, obviously scored a big goal. You know, he's got enough physicality. You know, he's responsible enough defensively that you can trust him out there in those situations, but he's also got that game breaker skill set that, you know, you may need if you're in a game and you're battling. It's just, you know, it's 2-2 and all of a sudden, you know, your fourth line gets an opportunity and the puck lands on Tolvanen's stick. That's, you know, you'd probably rather have it on his stick, you know, than Olivier. So I think my gut tells me Tolvanen. And that's probably the way that I would lean in this series to start anyway. So we'll see. We'll see how John Hines on. I feel like they have enough physicality up and down the lineup to still, you know, get in there and dominate in that part of the game without Olivier. But we'll see. You know, you're going to, at some point, you'll maybe be using all these guys. But I have a feeling that they would start Tolman, and that's just the way I would go.
Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, former Preds goaltender, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Tuesday morning at 9:30. See, Mace, playoff time finally here. It's going to be fun tonight. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
Thanks, Charles. Looking forward to it. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Chris Mason, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators as they prepare for game one against the Colorado Avalanche tonight. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. Playoff action in Cool Springs at Huckleberry Brewery on Fraser Drive next to Sperry's. It's the 1025 The Game watch party. And while you're there, register to win tickets to the Preds game versus the Avalanche. Game three coming up at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezevic are with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, I've put out my ideal lineup that I would like to see for the Predators tonight in game one against the Avalanche. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
I just wanted to see how quickly you could get off mute. Yes, we'll do that now. All right, here's my lineup tonight for the Preds, and we'll see what they actually do. Forsberg, Granlund, Duchesne, Tolvanen, Johansson, Tomasino, Trennan, Sissons, Janot, Cousins, McCarron, Cunnan at forward, and then Lauzon coming in on defense in place of Benning. So that'd be Yossi Fabro, Ekholm, Carrier, Borowiecki, Lauzon. What do you make of that lineup?
So you're going with the two young guns around Johansson.
I would like to I just don't think Luke Cunnan has it right now offensively. And I'm not saying that Tolvanen's got it all figured out either, but I'd like to give Johansson as many threats on his line as you can without splitting up Forsberg and Duchesne. So I'd probably give the edge to Tolvanen there.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I think that's, we talked about it way back at the beginning of the show. You know, I think Tolvanen, just like CMA's kind of echo, Tolvanen makes more sense in this series to me right now. You know, you see how things go. We know the lineup is going to change, but anyone you have who might be able to give you a goal here or there, I say scrounge together as many as you can. You know, interesting with the defense pairing. So if Lauzon is ready, would you do that? Because, you know, Borowiecki and Benning do have some chemistry and some history that could be beneficial.
I'd probably do it. I like the way Lauzon was playing before he got hurt. And, you know, I think he's more physical than Benning is. And I think he can skate too. So I'd probably go with that. But I hear your point. Like, I think for the most part, Borowiecki and Benning have been pretty good. Now, I do think since they've been put back together recently, I think they've struggled a little bit more than they did in the first part of the season. But I would go with Lauzon in game one. But if it's bad, I wouldn't hesitate to pull the trigger on it in game two and put Benning back in there. It's just kind of the way that I would handle it. Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Tristan from North Carolina, who wants to weigh in. Tristan, thanks for calling into Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, Robbie. Hey, Joe. Hopefully you guys are doing good. Calling from North Carolina, so I've dealt with the Carolina Hurricanes versus Nashville Preds series, and now I have a whole city full of Bostonians to deal with for the next week, so good stuff there. Wanted to ask and kind of just my favorite overreaction Mondays or Tuesdays in sports are always draft weekend overreaction and the overreactions after game one, round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Because Tampa got rocked last night. That game was absolutely fantastic. Boston got rocked as well by the Canes. The Kings looked darn good against Edmonton. And the Wild just got destroyed by St. Louis. On that end, what do you think happens if the Preds shellack Colorado tonight? What should our expectations be for the remainder of the series?
Hey, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. I mean, it is interesting. And we talked about that a little bit earlier, Joe. I mean, the amount of people just like pouring dirt on the Tampa Bay Lightning right now for losing to the Leafs last night is kind of unbelievable to me. But I mean, we'll see what happens in that series. But if the Preds go out there tonight and they win, and they win convincingly in game one, well, the reaction from Preds fans is going to be, oh my goodness, all right, well, we got ourselves a series here. Are people around the country going to freak out if the Preds win game one? I don't know, but it does kind of play into what we talked about earlier, where if you're the Avalanche, the more noise that gets around you, how do you handle that if you're Colorado? If you're the Predators, obviously it's good by itself to just win the game. That's the most important thing. But I think if you could create a little doubt in there for Colorado, that's a pretty good thing as well.
Yeah, people will react, I would say, pretty strongly because Colorado, because of what happened last year to them in the postseason. And so people are waiting to see a sign, like, are they ready to do this and, like, do, like, the Lightning in 20? Or are they just one of those teams that just isn't going to figure it out? And so I think if they got just throttled tonight, I think there'd be a lot of reaction to it. And it's just different situations. I still expect Tampa Bay to win their series. I just texted Vingan. I said, be ready for the replay of 5 years ago. We're talking about the series and stuff. Oh, and yeah. Just remember when the Preds won game one in Chicago. I mean, I don't remember how much there was overreaction or reaction or whatever, but it never changed. I mean, like, it just, Pecorino just kept, you know, like you said, game three was Forsberg with, I know, a huge goal in the third period to tie it. I think game three, wasn't that also the one where the puck came weird off the board and Pecorino had to, like, dive? But I mean, like, that series was established in game one. The Preds shut them out. They shut them out again, and they swept them.
So you call
them
sweep?
They had Pecorino, by the way, yes. No, I'm calling Avs in five.
Okay.
Now, if the Preds win tonight, maybe I'll get on board with you and go Avs in six.
There are some people that think that I'm just being crazy for picking this series the last six games.
Oh, by
it's
the
not
way,
like I'm saying like Preds in seven or anything. I'm saying Avs in six.
By the way, so Vingan tweeted out. Vingan talked to the Dominic from ESPN on why he picked him, but I have another. He didn't give me permission, but whatever. Corey Curtis, Preds in six. So put him on the board.
I like it. Board. Preds in six.
Also, Corey thought that I was ripping him on the 65 yards a game thing, which I forgot he said that too. I was ripping a texter, but Corey, you probably influenced the texting there, so I'll blame you too.
That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Game one tonight between the Preds and the Avalanche. Remember, puck drop at 8:30, pregame at 7:30 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stay tuned for Darren Dotick and Chase. They'll be discussing the A.J. Brown situation. Jim Wyatt coming up at 10:30, going to Colorado to talk Preds and Avalanche at 11 o'clock as well. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big.